and Arts. Book Review. The Constant Gardener. Rambunctious Garden, Saving Nature in a Post-Wild World by Emma Maris.
When the Scottish-born American naturalist John Muir encountered a pristine wilderness where the soaring mountains touched the open sky, birds sang in the pine trees, and fish spawned in the free-flowing rivers, he was determined to protect it from over-exploitation by the settlers who succeeded the Native American presence. Muir fought to ensure that the Yosemite Valley in California became a national park, and he succeeded in 1890. The concept of preserving nature from man's interference proved both powerful and enduring. Almost a century later, the Wilderness Act of 1964 empowered states to designate protected land. In Rambunctious Garden, Emma Maris outlines why the concept of wilderness is flawed. The journey begins in Hawaii, where biologists are toiling to remove species that have been introduced to the islands over the centuries since James Cook's party landed there in 1778. Invaders such as the purple-flowered Asian melastome and strawberry guava threaten to overrun delicate Hawaiian natives such as thornless roses and delicate tree ferns. Yet even if all the invaders were removed, it would only return the islands to the state into which the Polynesians, who inhabited them for at least 1,000 years before Cook's arrival, had shaped them. Even theoretically, returning Hawaii to a pre-human existence would be impossible. Ecosystems change over time, with or without the involvement of mankind, so no one can tell what Hawaii should look like. And mankind's influence on his environment is now such that he has changed the composition of the atmosphere over the past few centuries, so the effects of humanity can never be completely removed. Ms. Maris traces the emergence of a wilderness cult that she believes affects efforts to restore habitats to a previous form. She argues that early American environmentalists, such as Ralph Waldo Emerson and Henry David Thoreau, have been misread as its champions. Although Emerson described essences unchanged by man, space, the air, the river, the leaf, he also wrote of the perfect exhilaration of crossing a bare common in snow puddles at twilight under a clouded sky. And when Thoreau became determined to get away from it all in 1845, he retired to Walden Pond, a mere mile and a half away from the nearest village. Preserving nature, Ms. Maris writes, is a relatively recent preoccupation. Perhaps, but it has a longer history than the author fully acknowledges. A struggle between those who would remove man from a landscape and those who think we should actively manage the environment has existed since at least the 1930s. When the first global environmental organization was established in 1948, it was called the International Union for the Protection of Nature. The organization renamed itself in 1956, replacing protection with conservation in its title, because its members had grasped that people play an important role in shaping the natural world. Ms. Maris's book is an insightful analysis of the thinking that informs nature conservation. The author outlines the concept of rewilding habitats by introducing species that have been lost, of the assisted migration carried out by foresters who prepare for climate change by planting trees at the current limits of their ranges, and indeed the gardeners who transplant cuttings and seedlings from one part of the planet to another. She describes how ecosystems can be designed. Nesting birds can be encouraged to breed on a site by manipulating it to suit them, for example. And nature can flourish in areas that are not wild, such as city roof gardens. There are many reasons to value the natural world. Some people want to prevent certain species from becoming extinct, others to ensure the diversity of an ecosystem, to make use of clean air and water, or to revel in the beauty of a landscape. Happily, for both mankind and the natural world, Ms. Maris concludes, many such causes can be aligned.